Thank you, and welcome back. You're listening to Policy and Pino, an ongoing series of conversations on Rhode Island Public Radio in concert with the beautiful Providence Athenaeum. Joining me is two-time Rhode Island House candidate Louis Vargas, communications consultant Bill Fisher, and the Democrat representing Ward 3 on the Providence City Council, Nirva LaFortune. We're talking political narrative in the Twitter and Facebook era. I remain hopeful about the future for Twitter. It's gone through some kind of business struggles with a stagnant number of users. Maybe President Trump will change that. He certainly focused a lot of light on it. And there are times when you can have a thoughtful conversation on Twitter, but I think there are times when it almost represents the contemporary schoolyard. We've seen some skirmishing this week between two-time gubernatorial candidate Ken Block and a member of the Rhode Island Board of Elections, Steve Erickson. Block has been raising his claims that there are problems with voter integrity in Rhode Island, and he uses Twitter as a way to get this message out. Erickson is a member of the board that helps police this, and he says Block's complaints are baseless and that this is part of a broader effort to try to suppress the vote. And it's gotten a little bit chippy with, I guess, Erickson says he's been blocked by Block, but there's some kind of sort of name calling going around. So, Nirva LaFortune, I wonder, do you follow this as part of your foray into the political sphere in Rhode Island? And is Twitter a good way to discuss policy issues, or not so much?
Twitter is a good way to, again, provide quick information about policy issues, but to have a full-blown discussion, I think it's not the best platform, because then you have these feuds that take place online. So it's like two adults who are battling it out, not on the playground, but actually on social media. And so now it becomes very personal. So you're missing the whole point. You're not getting the fact that you need, but rather just these very spirited opinions. So I think if you're using it effectively and efficiently, it works. But if you're not, then it becomes problematic.
Bill Fisher, does it just come with the territory that there are these sorts of playground fights on Twitter sometime, along with, you know, the articles from the Washington Post and Rhode Island Public Radio and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I think for elected officials, for members of the media, Dan McGowan's here tonight. I see in the audience from WPRI. He has a forum on Facebook. He is a good police officer of that forum. And when people get out of line with caustic language, he's been a pretty good police officer of that medium. In a straight Twitter war between elected officials, there is no police officer. And you're assuming they're both adults, by the way. things can get a little out of control. We're living in a caustic environment right now with this presidency, and there's really no gray right now. I'm personally myself try to limit them, and sometimes we'll send a direct message saying, "Here's my cell, call me," to just kind of get away from 140 characters with no context.
An actual phone conversation.
Yeah. Social media can be quite antisocial.
That's like so 2005. Louis Vargas, you've had some tweets raising some questions or views in this parlay around Ken Block and Steve Erickson. What's your perspective on why you chose to weigh in with that?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting exchange they were having at first, and then it did become rather childish, I think. Like I mentioned earlier with Donald Trump's tweets, I think it's a lens into their mind at a given moment. And in the example of Erickson, like today, he actually tweeted that he thought Pagliarini and Block, he basically, you know.
Pagliarini, former state senator, lawyer for the Republican Party in Rhode Island.
Correct. At the Board of Elections meeting that happened last night, the only real objective they had was voter suppression, but it was in relation to a state act in regards to federal law. So I think he kind of provided a lens into what he was really thinking about. And how he would judge. I mean, he's someone who's going to decide these issues on the Board of Elections. So I think as a judge, you need to show a level of impartiality as a public official. It is important to do that in a public arena like Twitter. But now we know how he's most likely to rule on this issue. So I think it's important to keep track of it. And it's unfortunate that it happened that way. But I think the public is better for it.
There can be a real surreal quality to some interactions on Twitter or social media. I mean, one time when the 38 Studios issue was more present, some other reporters, including myself, were engaging with Kurt Schilling on Twitter, and he, you know, he wasn't really up for a long conversation about it, as his as has generally been true. But it can be surreal to kind of reach out and touch someone on Twitter that way. But I'd like to pull back and hit the panel with kind of a heavier issue. We live in an age when a couple of big knowledge technology companies really dominate the landscape, and I'm talking about companies like Facebook, Google, Apple, and Amazon. It seems like in Europe there's much more government regulation of these entities. Does the strength of these companies and the kind of monopolistic power they have, if that's an accurate description, does this raise concerns for you, Louis Vargas?
It's concerning, but I think at the end of the day, people are going to use the social media platform they want to use. I'm not sure there's much that we can do to stop it. People buy from Amazon because it's cheap. People buy from Walmart because it's cheap. People use Facebook because everyone's on Facebook. So I'm not sure that any real government regulation could fix that sort of problem, or whether or not that it really should. I think the problems that arise with that, it's up to the individual to, as Nerva was saying, to sort of filter through what you're looking at on Facebook and Twitter. And then there's also a lot of benefit that we've gained with big companies like this. Amazon employs hundreds of people in fulfillment centers that are looking for what you want to buy, right, when you order something online. That's time that you would normally be spending in a store looking for that yourself. So you gain a lot of value through companies like Amazon and Facebook and things like that. So.
Right, and there's one of those fulfillment centers that's relatively new across the state line in Fall River, and certainly those jobs are much needed there and here and everywhere. Bill Fisher, what are your thoughts on whether these companies pose monopolies and where this issue is headed?
I really don't have a strong opinion about this. I think we've seen monopolies come and go. Benny's is gone. When I was a kid, I grew up and we'd go to the neighborhood lumber yard. There's no neighborhood lumber yards anymore. There's an evolution to the marketplace. I think my only concern is when it creeps into who owns broadcast news, who owns news stations, who owns, the search engines. Does it limit us? Is it more controlling because they are tracking your marketing, your purchasing trends? And there's good in that. But there's also a tracking element, too, that I think we'd all be better off if we understood what's happening to this market data, how it's shared.
Nirva LaFortune, you represent your constituents here in Providence's Ward 3. It's a much bigger issue looking at the power of companies like Amazon and Apple and Google and Facebook. Your thoughts on that?
I agree with both colleagues, and I also don't have a very strong opinion. However, I think that I'm very uncomfortable with these companies tracking me, because then you get into the issue of privacy. And it makes me very uncomfortable when I am looking for a pair of shoes, and then the next thing you know, there's a Facebook ad saying with the color, the type of shoes that I was looking at, with that much detail. And so it makes you wonder, do you still have privacy? Can you go online and look for something without someone necessarily censoring you? I would hate for the government to censor me or anyone. And I think the beauty about living in America is that the government is not in control of the media. But then when you have major corporations or major media companies like Fox News buying up some of the smaller companies, then it also becomes a little problematic, because then you have the news coming from one particular perspective again. But the issue of privacy is concerning.
I've got a follow-up question for you, Nirva. We heard recently about the Equifax breach, the private financial data of 143 million Americans was breached by hackers, And yet Americans don't have the ability to say to Equifax, I don't want you collecting my data. I want to opt out. We can't do that. Does that show your worst fear, that we've lost control of our own private information?
It is. I think that every time that we share information, you put your credit card online, you share your social security number, someone is collecting that information and it's being shared. I think our country, our systems, we need to come up with a better system to address it. It's not going to happen overnight. I think that what's happening right now is showing us, that we need to have more checks and balances, and that people's privacies are at risk.
How about that, Bill Fisher? It seems we might see a move by the federal government to regulate the credit agencies a bit more like banks, but this has been late in coming. Why have our elected officials not done more to safeguard our privacy?
Probably because everything is moving so fast, technology is moving so quickly that we don't, again, have conversations about what this all looks like. And I think these breaches, it's not just Equifax, it's happening everywhere. You know, the hackers are always going to find a way to hack, and they're going to fix that bug, and then the hackers are going to hack again. And I think without the proper regulations in place about how we control this private information and these issues around privacy, technology outpaced probably a reasonable discussion here.
And Louis Vargas, let's get your view, too. You've spoken, like our other panelists, about the need for news consumers to be vigilant in considering the information they receive. But what about this element about how we are not individually able to control the flow of our own data?
Right. This is a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but it's definitely worrisome. I'm actually one of the 100 million or so that was likely affected by this breach. And with your social security number, that's what you have for life. And once somebody else has it, your identity is never really completely safe unless you have one of those services that protects your identity. I was just going to say that technology is starting to tackle the issue. I'm not sure that government regulation is actually the best way to tackle it. I think the market is finding ways to encrypt information and find different ways of doing things to make our information more secure. You see, like, I'm very ignorant on this topic, but like things like Bitcoin, I think, are like encrypting the transactions are starting to come into play in the market, and that could probably affect what happens with our personal information too.
Right. This has been a little bit of a heavy question, so let's go to something a little lighter. We don't want to just focus on the dark and foreboding. Let's, Louis Vargas, share one of your favorite moments from social media, Twitter, Facebook, or both.
Sure. So when I was running for office in 2016, I would post a daily story about an interaction that I had with someone in the public. When I knocked on their door, I always ask permission, obviously, but I would snap a picture sometimes. And to see people's reactions in the community to me knocking on their door or something like that was a great thing to share in public. I had a lot of people in my community who liked my page on Facebook and would, you know, see what street I was on and you know, what I was doing in my campaign, and actually saw that, you know, a candidate for public office was in their neighborhood at a certain time, like actually, you know, campaigning. So I'd say that's one of my best moments, besides my putting my wedding pictures up.
Nice. Bill Fisher, you're serious when it comes to politics, but you indulge your interest in being an amateur meteorologist. You couldn't really do that before Twitter or Facebook. Tell us about that.
I don't know why I didn't grow up a meteorologist. I grew up tracking the weather, you know, and staring at the sky and not doing my homework because it was going to snow, and then waking up and there was no snow on the ground. So that's probably where the fixation was born. I see my wife in the back row, so I too enjoy posting wedding photos, Vargas. didn't know she came in.
And Mirva LaFortune, tell us about one of your more memorable or positive moments on social media.
I have two. So one was, which I didn't realize it was going to get that much traction, but with everything that's happening with DACA, I had posted something that I was undocumented, I'm an immigrant, and I'm an elected official now, and it just got so much traction. And people came up to me to tell me, wow, this was really great. Thank you for posting that. They truly appreciate it. And to be able to share that story in again, like just a few characters, was amazing. And the other thing is I can now call myself a marathoner. I ran 3 marathons, and it was just great to be able to post that I finished the Chicago Marathon. So that was a highlight for me as well.
All right. Our time is counting down. I think I might just have one more question for the panel. We're heading up on an election year in Rhode Island, 2018. There will be an election for governor, statewide offices, and the General Assembly. What are you watching for, and how do you think social media will be the same or be different in the 2018 election season? Let's start with Bill Fisher.
I think you'll see a lot more sophistication with what I call Twitter ambassadors. And this can be somewhat manufactured by campaigns, but when these Twitter fights break out, when you're sharing good news or when you're defending yourself, that suddenly you see a lot of likes and rush to your aid. And those are very premeditated thoughts to try to for reporters to say, the governor put out a proposal. It has 100 likes. You know, who are those people? Are they within the campaign apparatus? Are they retweeting with great purpose? And so I think Twitter is getting more sophisticated in that way for campaigns to say, this is something we want to push all day. You know, get an email out to these 150 people who are gonna really drive it. I think that coordination is growing more. You know, for me, looking at campaigns right now, I'm not looking at social media. I'm looking at who's announcing, who's not, who's raising money in the fourth quarter of this year. Those are the barometers for me of what 2018 is going to start to look like.
Nir, for LaFortune, how about you? What are you looking to see in social media in this coming election year?
I hope that people are paying more closely attention to what is being tweeted or communicated via Facebook. I hope that they're vetting that information. And I hope that people are being more cautious about the information and have more conversations regarding it. Their opinions are not formed on just one thing or one tweet or one Facebook post, but they're asking questions and they're also having conversations with others.
Last word here to Louis Vargas. And are you going to be a candidate again in 2018?
I'll let my wife answer that a little later. I'd say that I hope that candidates use social media for what it should be, communicating your message in a positive way, not tearing anybody down. Working more importantly with in-person, face-to-face interactions. I'd say largely get off of social media, and the best way to earn a vote is to really ask for it face-to-face. So that's what that'd be my advice.
That's a great note to end on. We've had a wonderful panel, Louis Vargas, Nirva LaFortune, and Bill Fisher. We need to thank some other folks, Holly and Matt, and everyone at the Providence Athenaeum, Rhode Island Public Radio General Manager Tori Malatia, Rhode Island Public Radio News Director Elizabeth Harrison, Chief Operating Officer Susan Greenhalgh, and our Chief Timekeeper, Chief Engineer Aaron Reed, and you've been a really great audience. Please put your hands together, and thank you very much.